Coming up on KUCB News, a number of Alaskans are speaking out about bycatch concerns, and all Unalaska students are invited to attend summer school. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Monday, April 26th, 2021. The Unalaska School District is inviting all students to attend this year's summer school program. Students were not able to attend the program last year because of the coronavirus pandemic, and they've been learning from home, attending school for just a few hours a week, intermittently attending regular in-person classes, or some combination of those three, for roughly a year now. At the school board's meeting last week, high school principal Jim Wilson said those interruptions have stunted the academic growth of many students.
This year we recognize that everybody experienced significant learning loss because of COVID.
He says normally only the students in the lowest quartile are invited to attend summer school. But because of the added learning loss and extra unused funding from last year's program, the district has the capacity to expand it this summer. Superintendent John Conwell says school officials are not planning to add any special courses or programming. But high school students are invited to participate in credit recovery, where they can receive guided instruction.
That's for students who, you know, for whatever reason, may have gotten a little behind in their credits that they need to graduate from high school. So we set up a individualized program for them to, you know, earn either partial credit or a full credit.
Students through ninth grade finished with state standardized testing called PEAKS earlier this month. But Conwell says those results likely won't be available until at least August. He says students will take another state test, the MAP test, in May. That will offer immediate feedback and give administration a baseline assessment of how students are performing. He says those test results will help the district address this year's learning losses. There are currently about 110 students in kindergarten through eighth grade enrolled in Unalaska's summer school program. Alaska's kids have some of the worst reading scores in the country. It's been that way for some time, and for years, Alaska's lawmakers have attempted legislation that would improve those scores. This year, an education bill making its way through the legislature will provide funding for pre-K programs and standardized reading policies across the state. Alaska Public Media's Maya Wa'aina reports it's a rare issue lawmakers from both parties can agree on.
Historically, other states like Mississippi have kept Alaska company at the bottom of national rankings on fourth grade reading ability. But while Alaska remained at the bottom, sinking to last place in the most recent national assessment of educational progress, Mississippi students have soared from 49th to 29th place.
By golly, we've watched states that were down at the bottom of the pile with us shoot up to the top. At this point, I think even somebody who might be somewhat skeptical is like, well, what we're doing isn't working. We might as well try this.
That's Republican Senator Shelley Hughes. She's part of a bipartisan effort to address this problem. Senate Bill 111 would intensify interventions for students who are identified as struggling readers by the time they finish third grade, using help from the state education department to create individual reading plans. It would also require Alaska's kindergarten through third grade teachers to be trained in reading science. Alaskans are sometimes leery of models or initiatives that come from other places, but Hughes says she hasn't heard that criticism when it comes to this bill. Hughes says she's confident that these tactics will be successful.
The literacy piece is working very well in other states, and my hope was that rather than a trial and error, that we would take some of the learned lessons from other states and apply them.
Another part of the bill builds on legislation Democratic Senator Tom Begich worked on last year with Governor Mike Dunleavy and the State Department of Education. It enhances pre-K options in the state. Begich says Alaska's reading problem stems from a lack of support for early education.
We have a fairly disparate system. We don't have a clear policy for preparing our kids to come to school to learn, which is what early education does do. We have inconsistent pre-K policy around the state at the local level, and this bill seeks to enhance that. And part of the reason for that is we haven't been able to fund pre-K.
The bill would include money for pre-K students in districts that meet state-defined standards for pre-K programs. And it would provide grant funding for districts that want to improve or create pre-K programs if they don't already have them. The reading bill presented by Begich and Dunleavy last year was estimated to cost around $91 million over 6 years. But that bill never made it through the House, in part because of the pandemic. This year's bill is currently in the Senate Finance Committee. And there's a similar companion bill moving through the House right now, which Begich says may help grease the wheels on the bill's way toward becoming law this year.
It's a priority for the Senate majority, and it's a priority for the House majority to move strong education legislation through.
So Begich says he believes the bill has a strong chance of passing. In Anchorage, I'm Maiwa Aina.
Alaska's commercial fishermen have been speaking out against big trawlers for years, complaining that the large vessels in federal waters are scooping up mature and juvenile fish. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, the regional council that manages federal fisheries recently heard from hundreds concerned about the number of salmon and other species that end up as bycatch in trawl nets.
For Alaska's troll fleet, king salmon is their money fish. In state waters, small crews on these 40 to 50 foot boats, or even small skiffs, will catch a fish at a time, and it's worth it. Chinook salmon can fetch $6 a pound from a processor. But there's another big money fish in Alaska, pollock. It's the white fish found in a McDonald's Filet-O-Fish or an imitation crab stick. And the factory trawlers that ply the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska in search of pollock and other groundfish scoop up Chinook salmon and other species in their wide nets. Federal fisheries data show trawlers in the North Pacific took about a tenth of the Chinook or king salmon caught by Alaska's commercial salmon fleet last year, and those numbers are tracking the same this year. But none of that's on purpose. They can't keep or sell the kings. Those salmon are bycatch and have to be donated or thrown overboard.
I'm sitting here and trying to explain sustainability in fisheries and Alaska seafood and Alaska sustainability and how we have this great managed system up here.
Lexi Hackett is a Sitka-based trawler. She says the waste of the industrial trawl fleet is a black eye on Alaska's other well-managed and sustainable fisheries.
And of course, there's always going to be room for improvement. But for me, the big elephant in the room is this kind of mismanaged, wasteful bycatch issue with trawlers that happens. And honestly, it's just unacceptable.
This isn't a new issue, but recently the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which manages federal fisheries, invited testimony on the issue of bycatch. Hundreds of fishermen, industry workers, and native people and organizations from around the Pacific Northwest and Alaska wrote and called in over 3 days of this month's meeting. By nature, trawl fisheries incidentally catch all kinds of species, salmon, herring, and halibut, to name a few. It's a tiny proportion of what they catch, roughly 1%, according to NOAA Fisheries, but trawlers harvest such massive volumes that it's an issue, especially for species like Chinook salmon, which are by far the most threatened. Becca Robbins-Gisclair, the director of Arctic Programs at the Ocean Conservancy, an environmental nonprofit, says commercial and subsistence harvests of kings in Alaska have been dropping for years.
I know for me, 15 years ago when I was first working on the Yukon River and we were first having these conversations about salmon bycatch, you could buy Yukon River Chinook salmon in a grocery store. There were marketing campaigns to try to expand those markets. Now the idea of buying a Yukon Chinook salmon in a grocery store in Washington seems as bizarre as hugging someone outside of your household.
There are a variety of federal measures already in place to try and reduce wasted bycatch. One is what's called the Incentive Plan Agreement. It basically allows some flexibility in bycatch limits for processors and fleets by letting them earn credits for minimizing bycatch. Those credits can then be used in later years to take even more when industry analysts say bycatch is less avoidable. Some in the industry say that's a good system. Here's Austin Estabrooks with At Sea Processors Association, which represents some of the largest factory trawlers.
The incentives are clearly forcing the fleet to fish in the same general areas of lowest Chinook bycatch.
But others associated with groundfish and pollock trawl fisheries in Alaska point out that rolling closures and strict bycatch limits can be, well, limiting. John Groover is the intercoop manager for United Catcher Boats, a fishing trade association. In the vast expanses of the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea, exactly where trawlers need to avoid can vary widely year to year. Last year, the winter savings area of the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands fishing area closed, a stretch of water the size of Maryland.
It's a huge problem to manage bycatch when you have mandatory closure areas for other species or other reasons.
Many of those who testified to the council noted the destructive impacts on subsistence fisheries. Rural Alaskans, many of them in native communities, rely on this to feed their people.
The continued waste of salmon and halibut in the federal fisheries at the current levels are unacceptable, and action must be taken to reduce bycatch.
Melissa Johnson is executive director of the Bering Sea Elders Group, a tribal association from 39 tribes in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and Bering Strait regions.
Our elders have always taught us not to waste our different food sources, whether they be birds, different greens from the land, berries, and most importantly, a lot of us throughout the state of Alaska and into the lower 48 and other areas around the world we all can relate about a type of fish.
Rachelle Daniel is Yupik and an officer with the Pew Charitable Trusts. She added she appreciates what has already been done by the industry and council to reduce bycatch, but she still sees a glaring hole in the discussion, formal invitations to Native people and organizations to share their ways of knowing.
To gain a more deeper understanding about the issue, you should also invite Indigenous organizations and regional management bodies to share more information. Not only to gain a better understanding about what food security and cultural perspectives mean, but about observations and measures that people are taking to conserve salmon.
Members of the powerful North Pacific Fishery Management Council say they're listening. Council member Andy Mezzaro says he hopes to get a formal report that can shed light on the issue and that puts it in plain terms that anyone can understand.
And not for the average person with a master's degree in biology, because I think we're seeing a lot of engagement on this issue, and I think the more the public can understand the good work that's being done to figure out how many, where these salmon are coming from, and the impact on the exact streams that they're worried about, the more informed the public is, the better they'll become aware of the extraordinary efforts that we're making to try to figure out the impacts on these communities.
After hearing public testimony and invited presentations, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council formally requested more information on where salmon would have been returning if they hadn't been bycatch, as well as updated information to matrices that correlate salmon length to age, another vital part of determining the total impact of bycatch to Alaska's Chinook salmon populations. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
The Unalaska City Council meets tonight via teleconference and Zoom. At their special session, councilors are expected to establish funds for community support grant applicants. They will also discuss a one-time utility rate increase. The City Council will meet tonight at 6 o'clock. The community is encouraged to participate in the meeting. People can join Zoom online or telephone in at one of the numbers provided on our community calendar at kucb.org. Comments and questions can also be emailed in advance to City Clerk Margie Veeder no later than 5 p.m. today to be read into the record at the meeting. Or you can also listen live here on 89.7 FM or Channel 8 TV. Finally, April is National Poetry Month. Stay tuned after the newscast and throughout the day to hear Unalaskans reading some of their favorite poems. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.